Rat Pack, where you at?
Hey, what's going on? It's Friday, November 15th. We're already halfway through November. What the heck, man? I guess time flies when you're having fun, and I did have a lot of fun last night watching that game. Although I had some Washington going, that wasn't fun, but it was entertaining regardless. By the way, I'm Jeff. This is The Rant, and let's talk about that game, Thursday Night Football, and we're also going to preview the remaining games on the slate. Friendly reminder, all my stuff resides over at a place called ftnfantasy.com. It is awesome. It is tremendous. It is a sports better and fantasy players paradise. So why don't you go check it out? We find the edge for you. That's what we do. We find the edge over at ftnfantasy.com. So go check it out. And if you want to get in on the subscription, get behind the paywall, promo code Rat Pack for 10% off. All right, so let's talk about last night. First and foremost, you know, we'll go on the Philadelphia side. It was not clean early in the game. Washington defended them very tough. They missed several field goals. We may have a kicker change coming up here for the Philadelphia Eagles. Who knows, with Elliott missing multiple kicks in this game. But Philly wore them down. You know, they kept going back to Saquon Barkley. They kept going back to Saquon Barkley. And when you have a unicorn like him, when you have this type of player who can handle 20-plus carries on the regular, they kept going back to Saquon Barkley, and eventually he wore him down. Barkley was a monster in this game, 26 for 146 and two late touchdowns. Whew. He iced the game twice, which was pretty awesome. He also had a long reception. He goes 2 for 52, you know, whatever with the two catches, but blew by his player prop line. As far as the pass catchers are concerned, you know, A.J. Brown got off to a decent start, and then, you know, Hurts missed a couple throws. There was one throw Hurts just missed it in the first half. And it wasn't like a deep ball or anything. It was a poorly thrown ball. Brown could have taken it and had a pretty big gainer. You know, it would have been at least a 20-yard reception. And who knows, based on where the safety was positioned, it could have been even bigger than that. But honestly, this is a floor game for A.J. Brown. You know, and if your floor is 11.5 PPR points, okay, not terrible. Dallas Goedert, solid performance, 5 for 61, had a fumble that Calcaterra ended up grabbing for the first down. He even pointed for the first down, which was kind of silly. Devontae Smith, yeah, 4 for 29. Not his best outing, but it's okay. He's boom or bust. The whole Jahan Dotson thing, I think we see why Washington traded him away. That was my concern when they did trade him away, and here we go. Jalen Hurts, 221, was not his best outing, but he still managed a tush-push touchdown. Got you 39 rushing yards and the touchdown, which was definitely it salvaged his fantasy value. Over to the other side. So I'll tell you this. The backfield looked really good. Now, Brian Robinson only ended up with 16 for 63, but he scored the touchdown. So if you used him, not terrible. Caught a ball for 9 yards as well. But when they were using formations with both Robinson and Eckler back there, that created some challenges. I thought that was super creative by Cliff Kingsbury, who I don't always think is the most creative play caller, play designer, all of that, but it was really creative and it was really fun to watch. And Eckler, 8 for 89 as a pass catcher. That's pretty good. Now, he only ran the ball twice for 7 yards. I don't think anybody expected him to out-carry Brian Robinson. Hopefully, we see more than just this. You know, he's taking shape as sort of that like Giovanni Bernard, Duke Johnson type, where they do a lot in the passing game, some games, and very rarely do much in the run game. But if they don't hit in the passing game, they're not great options. So just keep that in mind with Eckler going forward. Obviously, Zach Ertz down the stretch got his revenge game touchdown, had one of the prettiest 2-point conversion receptions you're ever going to see. It was an absolute masterclass in keeping your feet in bounds. Nice work from him. But he had a quiet game until the very end. Garbage time was a good thing for Zach Ertz. If you started him, good for you. Okay, I saved the worst for last. Obviously, Terry McLaurin only had 1 for 10. Not a good outing. Not a good outing. Not much we can do there. They had him bottled up. But beyond that, a bigger question. Is Jaden Daniels still an every week starter? I don't think he is. He hasn't had a top five fantasy week since week three. Now, he's had some decent performances in there, but we get a lot of games like this where he does show up as a rookie. Now, he's a darn good rookie. This is not a knock on Jaden Daniels, but he shows up as a rookie. I don't think we can just lock him into one quarterback league lineups anymore. That doesn't mean panic, doesn't mean freak out, doesn't mean drop him for sure, and I don't think you're doing that. But at least it's something to look at here. Now, Washington, moving forward, has Dallas, which is good next week. Tennessee, which I'm not worried about Tennessee at this point. I think your coach there, Callahan, is coaching for his job, trying to get a second year out of this thing. But I'm not worried about it. Then they have a bye in week 14. They get New Orleans, which is good. Back to Philly, which is not good, in week 16. And then Atlanta in week 17, which actually isn't that bad. So I think, if anything, your stretch run is good, with the notable exception of Philly and the bye week, if you have Jaden Daniels. Just something to note, he'll likely still be a top 12 every week given his ceiling, but there is a lot of volatility with him that is worth noting. All right, let's move into the game previews here for you. And again, you know, if you're just picking up this podcast now, maybe you found me on Blue Sky. But if you're just picking this podcast up now, shout out to you for stepping in week 11. Chances are you've been here all season long, though, and you know I'm not going to say the obvious starts here, but we should rip through each of the important items. So let's start with I think this is a really interesting litmus test game, Green Bay-Chicago. Green Bay, in theory, should win this game handily. Do they in practice? Because it is a divisional game. Divisional games can always be tricky. So what ultimately plays out here is going to be very telling for the Green Bay Packers moving forward. But it's also Chicago, Matt Eberflus coaching for his job. Shane Waldron out at offensive coordinator Thomas Brown in. Does that change anything, or is it just more of the same? And the same has not been good recently, obviously, for Chicago. It hasn't been good since they were in London. On the Green Bay side, Jordan Love, obviously the last two games before their bye were not good. He was playing through injury, though. He is practicing in full, should be good to go. He is a quarterback one when he's healthy. It's not the easiest matchup, but he's a quarterback one. As far as the wideouts, same thing as usual. Jaden Reed has the highest ceiling. Dobbs has the highest floor. Watson is the most volatile, right? And so I prefer them in that order. If I have to use Watson, it's only as a flex option. And Jacobs is fine. Let's go to the other side, though, because this is more interesting. Caleb Williams, zero passing touchdowns in three straight games. He had four in that London game, but that was all the way back in week six. He's on pace to be sacked 71 times, which would be third most in the NFL since the stat became official back in 1982. Yikes. Can this change things? I don't know. He's not usable outside of Superflex, right? As far as DJ Moore, we've already done the DJ Moore bit several times. He is boom or bust. That's what we signed up for. This is not new. This is not like all of a sudden DJ Moore became boom or bust. He's been this way over the course of his entire career. Any given week, this dude could go out and have a couple touchdowns and 150 yards, or he could have 2 for 12. Like, anything is possible with this dude. Just know, as a wide receiver three, that's what you're signing up for. And if you can't handle him putting up a dud in your starting lineup, then he's not the type of player you should be rostering. But that is the type of player he is. As far as DeAndre Swift, honestly, he's been really solid. Hopefully, Thomas Brown continues to use him heavily here. He is an RB2 play. Let's move to Jacksonville and Detroit. So Trevor Lawrence, the word is it is a significant AC joint injury. But it is his left shoulder. So non-throwing shoulder, still, it's going to be quite painful. Shoulder injuries can be really rough. Like, you know, one of the hardest parts is the way the pain works with the shoulder injury. It really impacts sleeping. Like, oftentimes, like a rib injury too. Like, you're almost, like, you have to sleep in a chair as opposed to just laying down. Because any sort of movement, you're rolling over, you're waking yourself up, you know. So sleep is going to be rough. Shoulder injuries suck, like, plain and simple. They have their bye next week, though, and there is at least hope that he doesn't have to have surgery and doesn't go to, like, season-ending IR. But Mac Jones isn't going to be good for anybody. Brian Thomas moves way down with him under center. He is a wide receiver three. You know, I don't move Evan Ingram. I think Evan Ingram was fine, top 10. If anything, good for Mac Jones right now. But Brian Thomas, yeah, he takes a hit. Now, I want to move to Tank Bigsby, because Bigsby is... he has yet to practice this week. They have their bye next week. So he may not play here. I don't have a Friday practice report because I'm recording this early on Friday morning. But if he goes DNP again, don't expect him to play. I wouldn't be dropping this dude. He's still their best early down back. He's still having a good season. And I like to look at the body of work the last four games, not just the last two. And I talked about this on the podcast yesterday. So if he doesn't go, though, ETN will be an RB2, even against Detroit. Jared Goff, this is a good, very good football season. It is not the best fantasy season. I think that's flying under the radar for some people out there. Like, if we look to what Jared Goff has done, he hasn't finished inside the top 10 fantasy quarterbacks since week 7. It's a favorable matchup here, no doubt about it. I'm not going to deny that. But I think game script actually favors the backfield, loving Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery more so than it does Jared Goff. Amon-Ra is going to be fine. Like, even in games where he doesn't have a lot of catches, he still can catch a touchdown. I mean, he's had 1 in 7 straight games. So he's going to be fine. But Jared Goff's more of a quarterback 2 option. We'll keep an eye on Sam Laporta, who was banged up last week. I know some people are still using him. He has yet to practice as of today. He has an AC injury as well, AC joint injury. Minnesota, Tennessee, I'm not buying the Sam Darnold stinks narrative. Like, he is Sam Darnold. And honestly, the interception's not optimal, but I just talked about Jared Goff. Like, nobody is saying Jared Goff's regressing because he had 5 interceptions last week. You know, nobody's saying that. Darnold had 3. They were aggressive throws. I will take the aggressive throw interceptions. Now, maybe they're not the best for him for long-term fantasy or long-term football, not fantasy, long-term football purposes. But for fantasy, we don't lose a lot of points for interceptions. And if he's making them on aggressive throws, they're not just like Will Levis boneheaded, you know, let's just toss the ball up into the air like Daniel Jones sometimes can do. As long as they're aggressive throws, I'm fine. So everything really matters. Like, they were turnover worthy, like interception worthy throws. Don't get me wrong. But as long as they're aggressive throws, I'm okay. So I think Darnold's fine to keep rolling with as a streamer option. I mean, I'm not going to go too overboard here. Let's put it this way. I think he's better as a super flex option than he is in one quarterback leagues. As far as the latest rankings, which of course we have over at ftnfantasy.com, I have Darnold at, I have him at 13. Okay, so he's just on the edge of QB1 territory. He's a viable streamer in this matchup. I don't know if Tennessee keeps it close enough or not, but things still should be good enough for Darnold to be in that streamer territory. Obviously, it helps anytime you have Justin Jefferson at your disposal. That is a good thing. 831 receiving yards this season. He's second in the league behind Ja'Marr Chase. That means he is 100 and a very nice 69 yards away from becoming the fourth receiver ever to have a 1,000 plus in each of his first 5 seasons. The other 3, pretty good list here. Randy Moss, that's good. AJ Green, also pretty darn good. And Mike Evans, of course, we know that one. TJ Hockenson is back in top 10 territory after catching 8 balls. He looked great last week, so love that. And Aaron Jones looks like he's going to play, so thankfully we won't have to use Cam Akers. To the other side, if Will Levis can play like last week, he will be a super flex option. Now, he has had basically 2 games like that, and the remainder of his games have not been like that. It was his first start that was awesome, remember last year, and then last week. Those were good games. Maybe not great. Well, the first game was awesome, but last week wasn't necessarily great, but it was good. And we just need him to keep throwing the ball to Calvin Ridley, and all will be right with the world. Tony Pollard dealing with that foot issue, but he should play here. He got limited practice in yesterday, so I'm not overly concerned about his status. He's a back-end RB2. Vegas and Miami, Vegas is really simple. I mean, they're using Gardner Minshew, so maybe you get benched again. But it's Bowers and Jacoby Myers. If you're desperate, it's Alexander Mattison as a flex option. But really, Bowers and Jacoby Myers are the only usables. Moving to the other side, though, much more intriguing. So Tyreek Hill has the wrist injury. I know a lot of people are making a lot about it. But Wes Welker did come out, and I believe I mentioned this in the podcast yesterday, and said it's not impacting his play. So what is impacting the play? Is it Tua Tagovailoa? Is it opposing defenses scheming them up? I'm not quite sure, but I know that Tyreek Hill is always a ticking time bomb. I'm still going to rank him as a top 10 option. Jaylen Waddle is not a top 10 option, but he is a wide receiver 3 play. And then I think this one sets up extremely well for Devon Achane. You're using him regardless in season long, but more for the DFS heads out there. I do think he is worth paying up for at running back. Rams and New England. Another game is really straightforward. If you have Cup, Nacua, Kyren, you're using them. I don't know if we can trust Stafford as anything more than a super flex option this week. I mean, the 6 touchdowns over the last 3 games is impressive, except none of them came last week. So that's the one downfall here. They could have a game script, too, that ends up favoring Kyren Williams. Cup and Nacua will be fine, right? But I don't know about Stafford here. To the other side, I think Drake May is still very viable in Superflex. Really impressed with him this season, even though the team isn't very good. And the only other player that I'm using is Ramondre, just because he can score touchdowns. But we know it's a bit boom or bust with Ramondre Stevenson. Cleveland and New Orleans, Jameis Winston, revenge game. He's going to be the starter. Jameis is viable in Superflex, not as a streamer. He will turn the ball over. He will close his eyes and just throw the ball downfield. But the good news is when he does it, he does have a guy in Cedric Tillman who can get downfield and make some of those plays. Obviously, Jerry Jeudy helps out. David Njoku as well. But Tillman is intriguing. Now, I have seen some people out there on the interwebs who have been overvaluing Cedric Tillman. Now, it's fine to have your own evaluations of players. In fact, I encourage anybody who follows along with what I do to have your own perspectives. Don't just take my perspective. Like, one thing that I will say kind of it irks me is when people are like, what would Jeff do? And it's like, well, Jeff would do what he does, but you should do what you do, right? Take some of my perspective, sure, but you're not going to be me. And so don't try, right? You know, try to understand what I'm saying. Try to incorporate the things that you like about my approach. But you're not going to be me. You have to establish who you are as a fantasy player, right? So anyway, I would encourage, though, to try and stay grounded and measured in your evaluations, because I had this one dude hit me up saying, like, well, I view Cedric Tillman as more of a fringe wide receiver one. And it's like, well, I understand why that person views it that way, views things that way. But I think it's also an overvaluing of Tillman's last 3 games. Now, granted, they did occur with Amari Cooper out of the way, but we're still talking about a boom or bust guy on a bad team with Jameis Winston as his quarterback. So I would give you, like, if you said, Jeff, you have him as a wide receiver 3, which is ranked anywhere from 25 to 36, right? Jeff, you have him as a wide receiver 3. I think he's more of a back end wide receiver 2. Like, I would give you that, because that's not too outlandish, but people saying he's a top 12, like, that's pushing it. And maybe it ends up being right, but I've learned over the years that hyper-aggressive takes, whether they're overvaluing a guy too much or undervaluing a guy too much, well, they don't end up being right very often. They end up, you know, hey, maybe it looks cool, maybe you get some likes on your blue sky post, but ultimately, It ends up being problematic for the person with the take. Usually the best answer is somewhere in the middle. And usually that's where I try to be with my evaluations. Now, I like him a lot. Don't get me wrong. I like him a lot, but more as a upside wide receiver 3. Nick Chubb, 2.7 yards per carry this season. This is a favorable matchup, so he is a back-end RB2 this week, but my expectations are fairly low for him. Hopefully he gets in the end zone. If I have to use him in a league, I don't love it. It's a 14-team league. Yikes. So hopefully he gets in the end zone. Derek Carr, 8.1 yards per attempt this season. It's not bad. He has nobody to throw the football to. And remember, Marquez Valdez-Scantling is, the last time I checked, still Marquez Valdez-Scantling. And what I mean by that is the zebra is not changing his stripes. Sure, he had 2 touchdowns last week. He only had 3 catches. It was not a dominant performance. That is like the quintessential boom or bust type performance right there. 3 for 109 and 2. If he had more than even like the 3 targets that he had, like if he had 10 targets, then all of a sudden I might have a slightly different take on him, but he's still the same dude. And we've actually seen this song and dance out of him before, so just be careful with him. Could he be a flex option? Maybe. I don't like it, though. Really, all I like here is Alvin Kamara and Taysom Hill. Kamara's been so productive this season. Leads the NFL in touches, 3rd in scrimmage yards heading into the week, 8th straight season with 1,100 plus scrimmage yards. That's insane. Like, it is a Hall of Fame career, but I know there's more to it than just that. That's always, it's such a subjective thing. Anyway, Indianapolis and the Jets, Anthony Richardson is back. It is not good. It's definitely not good for the likes of Michael Pittman Jr. or Josh Downs. Downs is the one I prefer as a wide receiver three. Pittman Jr., I almost don't want to play. Now, I'm going to say that in a vacuum because I'll say things on here and then people be like, well, I know you said you weren't going to play him. And then I'll look at their roster and it's like, well, you have to play him because you don't have anybody else. If I can get away with it, and the way that I construct rosters, I very likely have, I think I have Pittman at 50. Let me just double check right now. And that's a tentative rank here. I'm at 52. So chances are I have at least three, or if I'm using four wide receivers on a roster, I have at least four guys who are ahead of him, the way that I build rosters in rankings for the week. So I don't have to use them, but you may have to. It always depends on your roster. So when I say sort of blanket statements here, I apologize for that because I realize it may not apply to your roster and it may give you the wrong idea. So I try to be as clean on that as possible. That's why I hate start sit columns. I think that's it's trash, honestly. I realize we have a start sit article at ftnfantasy.com, but we're fighting an uphill battle against the internet and search, you know. But if I say sit this guy, let's say you have this guy, but let's say this guy, whoever it is, let's say it is Michael Pittman Jr. If I say sit him and he's your highest ranked wide receiver, you have to start him. Now, you're kind of screwed if he's your highest ranked wide receiver, but also, though, you have to start him because he's your highest ranked receiver. Like, telling you to sit him is really crappy advice. You know, that whole aspect of fantasy advice giving from 20 years ago that unfortunately still exists, I don't like it because it doesn't apply to individual rosters. Anyway, enough about that. Richardson hurts the cause. Jonathan Taylor is going to be just fine. Actually, last week he passed Eric Dickerson and Lenny Moore for the fourth all-time in Colts franchise history in terms of rushing yards. He has 123 to get to Marshall Faulk. He's not getting to one. But he could get to third. Possibly this week against the Jets. Over to the other side, Rodgers. Breece Hall is fine. Garrett Wilson has 100 targets through the first 10 weeks of the season. That's pretty awesome right there. 65 catches. That's the most through 10 games in a season in Jets history. So I want to look at more than just last week with the Jets. Last week wasn't good. The week before was very good. And so our sample size actually indicates Aaron Rodgers can get it done in the right spots. Is Indy the right spot? Perhaps. The thing we have to pay attention to, though, is Devontae Adams. So he's missed the first two practices of the week with an illness. I don't think that his status is in jeopardy, but if it is, all of a sudden Garrett Wilson, I mean, you're talking about a 15-target game for Garrett Wilson. You know, Adams has been targeted more than Wilson since joining the team, but Wilson, both of them are still wide receiver ones if they play. Not worried about it. Baltimore, Pittsburgh. Lamar Jackson has not done good against Pittsburgh. He has four career starts. I had to look that up because I was like, that doesn't make sense. But it is true. Four career starts against them. And in those four games, he has four passing touchdowns and seven interceptions. I mean, I'm not saying to bench him or anything because that'd be stupid. But just something to pay attention to in here, in this game. He has struggled against Pittsburgh over the course of his career. But, you know, you're using him and Derrick Henry. Heck, Mark Andrews, even Zay Flowers, who has not been the most consistent player, but the ceiling is great. We're going to keep an eye on Deontay Johnson, but we're not using him. I mean, I can't use him. I have no clue what his usage is going to be. As far as the other side, really liking what Russell Wilson is doing with George Pickens. He's a fringe wide receiver one. Mike Williams in a very similar conversation to Deontay Johnson. I don't think we can use him. I want to roster either one or both of those guys if I have them, but I'm not using them and could just pay attention to their usage. Russell Wilson trending up into streamer territory, by the way. And then Najee Harris. This dude never misses football games. Jaylen Warren, meanwhile, has missed some football games. Najee Harris has never missed a start in his career, by the way, as a pro. But Jaylen Warren pops up on the injury report, DNP with a back issue yesterday. So we'll keep an eye on that. If he doesn't go, it'll be a lot of Najee. Atlanta, Denver. Kirk Cousins does really well against teams who are not the Saints. So Denver is not the Saints, but Denver's also very good against the pass. So I don't want to use Cousins outside of Superflex this week. That's it. I'm not worried about Drake London. Oh, Darnell Mooney, though, another player who popped up on the injury report. He went limited with an Achilles. I don't know what the extent of the injury is, but I think panicking on a Thursday is a bad move. We have to see what happens on Friday. If you're planning to use Mooney, just make sure you have a backup plan in place, and then we'll adjust as necessary when we get the information. Bijan is rolling, so you know that. On the Denver side, I think Bo Nix is fine as a streamer. You know, this kid has really impressed this season. Like, he's not putting up like superstar numbers like Jaden Daniels was earlier in the year, but he's just good. You know, and you can tell all that experience that he had over the course of his college career has really paid off. He is a top 10 play for me this week. I like the connection he has with Sutton. And obviously the biggest thing here is let's see if we can continue to return investment on that Audric Estime pickup. Not that we made this week, the one that we made last week for nothing. I got him at 2% in a league, and that was even an overbid. I think I could have gotten him at 1%. Because you know how you can check. This is an ESPN league. You can actually check what your opponents bid. So that way, you know, it's an important thing to do. It's something I'd never talk about with Fab. But seeing what they bid, you know their tendencies. And that's important. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on him. He's a flex play this week. Remember, he hasn't done anything for fantasy just yet. Seattle, San Francisco. Geno is a top 10 option. He's going to have DK Metcalf back. I think they're going to have to throw to keep pace with San Francisco. Kenneth Walker. This one's interesting. So in games with DK Metcalf compared to games without DK Metcalf, all right, ready for this? In two games without him, 16.6 fewer scrimmage yards per game, zero touchdowns scored. In the five games that DK Metcalf and Walker have played together this season, Walker has 7 total touchdowns. Why do I think that is? It's because DK Metcalf stretches the field, and that frees up things for Walker. They don't have to stack the box because they can't stack the box with DK because they're just going to kill him downfield. So I think that's part of it here. Over to the other side, I mean, Brock Purdy's rolling. McCaffrey is rolling back in elite territory. Debo, then Jennings, but Jennings is a wide receiver to play, and he could end up leading the team in targets going down the stretch here. No doubt about it. As far as Kittle, he managed to get limited, which means he's going to play. He was DNP on Wednesday, limited. He's got a hamstring issue, but he's an elite. He has no finishes outside of the top 10. Be careful with Ricky Pearsall. It is a little volatile. I know people are reading a lot into that touchdown from last week, but he still is the fifth target in that offense, whether you like it or not. Kansas City, Buffalo, Kansas City with Travis Kelce rolling. DeAndre Hopkins is still, you know, still wide receiver two, fringe wide receiver two. Like last week was his floor, and that's fine. This should be the last week we get Kareem Hunt. We may get one more after this, but Pacheco is angling towards coming back. So you could sell on Kareem Hunt still. If I don't have, if my wide receivers are, you know, sort of maxed out, if I have 7 wideouts and I don't want to, you know, acquire a wideout. Like if I'm thin at wideout, I would trade him for a wideout, but chances are you're probably not. So I would try and at least trade him for an RB2 if I could get one. Josh Allen, good. Amari Cooper, I don't know if he actually does get back this week, but it looks like we're trending in that direction. He ended up going limited in the first 2 practices of the week. Cooper would be at least a flex, if not a wide receiver 3 play. Obviously, it would take some of the win out of Khalil Shakir's sales, but a lot of it also is impacted by whether or not Dalton Kincaid plays. DNP in back-to-back practices, Dawson Knox is not a viable replacement for Dalton Kincaid. He would be a sort of close-your-eyes desperation Jameis Winston throw-the-ball-downfield streamer at best. Cincinnati and the Chargers, Burrow is rolling. He's so stinking good. I wish the defense was better, man. Chase is rolling. I get a lot of questions about T. Higgins. They're like, you know, the people are talking. The streets are talking, and they say, why, Jeff, are you not ranking him? Because we don't know if he's going to play. Like, he's only limited, and let's say he got banged up last week, exited the game, started the week limited. I'm very confident that dude plays. If he missed last week and he's still limited, I am not confident that dude plays. So that's why I am where I am. Of course, things could change today. Let's see what Friday practice reports suggest with him. Chase Brown rolling too, by the way. No competition for touches in that backfield with Khalil Herbert back there. Another Herbert pretty darn good. Justin Herbert, over his last 5 games since the bye, 262 passing yards per game, 8.7 yards per attempt. Explosive plays galore. You got Quentin Johnson out there catching touchdowns. You got Ladd McConkey out there. I like the whole setup for them. J.K. Dobbins, He's played 9 games this season. He played in 9 games from 2021 to 2023. That's so good for him. I'm so happy for this dude. And yeah, Gus Edwards is there, but Dobbins is still the lead back. I'm not worried about Gus Edwards. Gus Edwards isn't even rosterable to me, and I feel bad for people out there who ran out to pick him up. He's Gus Edwards. I mean, we know what he is, and he only benefits if Dobbins gets hurt, and let's hope that doesn't happen. All right, we'll round it out with the battle for Texas here, Houston and Dallas. This wasn't supposed to be this type of game, but it's going to be this type of game because Dallas is scraping the bottom of the barrel with Cooper Rush as the starter. We should see some Trey Lance, maybe in deep superflex you pick up Trey Lance, but otherwise, I don't think it's terrible for CeeDee Lamb, to be honest with you. He's still going to see target volume. So it's not good for CeeDee Lamb, but I think we can position CeeDee Lamb still as a viable front-end wide receiver too. You know, and if he catches that touchdown last week, everybody has a different, they're singing a different song about him. Rico Dowdle is now finally, I guess, the clear lead back in the backfield. So he's at least a flex. They should struggle to move the football, but he's at least a flex. To the other side. Okay. Nico Collins. Will this dude play? As of right now, here's what I can tell you. He was limited to start the week. That usually is not a good thing for guys who are designated to return, but not yet activated. Now, it doesn't mean he's not going to play, but I would not simply bank on Nico Collins playing. We need 2 more days of practice reports. We're not going to get, obviously, everything we need today, although it would be nice if they just said, oh, yeah, he's activated. But they probably won't do that, knowing how NFL teams operate. That's a Saturday move if it's going to happen. So prepare for it to not happen. And if it does happen, be happy when it does happen, right? If it does happen, obviously we're using him, even in a game where it looks like, you know, game script doesn't favor them. Favor the passing game. It does favor them by a lot, in fact. Joe Mixon should be just fine here. The volume is going to be spectacular, like usual, and the efficiency should be a lot better than it was last week. Stroud is tricky. If Collins plays, then I think you can use Stroud as a top 12. If Collins doesn't play, then you're using Stroud as a streamer, and I wouldn't feel that great about it. So a lot of this depends on Collins. Tank Dell depends on Collins. John Mechie isn't usable unless, you know, desperation if Collins doesn't go, and even then I would not feel good about it. All right, there you go. That's it. That's the preview. Don't forget, that other pregame show is a TV show that I am on Sunday mornings on CBS Sports Network. It is a 4-hour NFL pregame show from 8 a.m. Eastern to noon Eastern. It's awesome. We talk everything across the board. I do, you know, betting and fantasy stuff on there, but it is a true NFL pregame show, which is a comprehensive conversation of everything in football. It is awesome. Follow along with me on social media, on Twitter, at Jeff Ratcliffe, on Instagram, at Jeff Ratcliffe, and guess what? On Blue Sky, at Jeff Ratcliffe. This is the world we're in 2024. I have to have 50,000 social media accounts. Also, ftnfantasy.com. Go check it out. All right, I'll catch you on a flip on Monday to recap it all. Otherwise, enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the games. I'm Jeff, and I'm out.